Have mercy upon us, O Lord, have mercy, for we have had more than enough of contempt. You know, there are plenty of times when I wrestle mightily with what the psalmist offers us, like verses about God's wrath and folks pleading for God to punish our foes. But then sometimes a psalm lands exactly where we seem to be as a people. This is one of them for me. Have mercy upon us, O Lord, have mercy, for we have had more than enough of contempt. I, for one, have had enough of contempt, far more than enough of it, honestly. It seems to have become the bread and butter of our nation, and I am so weary of it all. Hatred rises up among us, election after election, and a steady stream of vitriol fills in between those key moments. Now, it is easy to throw shade. But from what I see and hear, this contempt flows freely from all sides, liberal and conservative and everyone else. And here we go again. I get sucked into it myself. I get fired up, I get mad, and I get scared. And I also find myself throwing my arms up, wanting to shield myself, to block my eyes, to cover my ears. We were not made for contempt, and God does not call us to it. We were made for beauty and for communion. We were made by grace and for grace. Even as contempt swirls all around, there has to be another way. My hunch is that Jesus wrestles with similar questions. When we catch up with him in today's gospel, he has just returned home and things are a mess. Jesus is deeply frustrated with his family and neighbors and their unwillingness to believe that he is doing a tremendous new thing. Something that could heal them and set them free. And they are full of contempt for him. Here is this young Jesus, the boy from around the corner, and suddenly he thinks he is so special. How did he get so big for his britches? Didn't they raise him better than that? And so his big debut back home falls flat. And he is so shaken by their reaction that, as the gospel writer explains, he can do no deed of power there. Their words must weigh him down. They leave him struggling to push forward, wondering how he's going to live around this contempt, both what comes at him and also what seems to emerge from him. It's as if we can see the gears turning in his head as he explores another way. What if, with that big flop looming large, he has to dig in and choose how he's going to live and how he's going to invite his students to live? And so, then, the very next thing, Jesus sends the disciples out to try to live this same work. And given what's just happened, surely they must be thrilled. We're often quick to imagine his call to them as a sort of a desperate challenge. I hear it as if he's sending them out into the wolves to try to do something impossible. But if I slow down to take it all in, I think this fearful assumption of mine is based on a completely different model of evangelism. It's not what Jesus is talking about here. He's not sending them out to convert whomever they can find. They do not have Bibles in their hand to whack people over the head with. The disciples are sent to heal those they encounter. They're sent out to help any people they find and to share this abundant life with them. There's no convincing anyone of anything, no attempts to build a bigger movement or weasel in to get people's money or support. There's no place where the folks the disciples meet will have to sign on the dotted line. Here's where we've been confused. Jesus does not send the disciples out as missionaries, at least not in the way we've long imagined. No, he sends them out as guests. For starters, there is the packing list. It's absurd. He orders them to take nothing for their journey except a staff. No bread, no bag, no money in their belts, but to wear sandals and not to put on two tunics. Well, it sounds absurd today because it's built on the assumption that they will depend on strangers for everything they need. It's built on the expectation of trust and relationship. And then there's the stance he invites them to take on. They are to be curious and open. They are to meet people where they are, literally and metaphorically. They will be staying in these strangers' homes, living off what these surprise hosts can offer, and then listening to what concerns them, what ails them, what they most long for. They are to heal people and to set them free whenever they can. Sometimes it will work and sometimes it won't, and either way, Jesus says it's all right. Just shake off the dust, leave it there, and keep going. For months, I have been fretting about how to live through another election cycle, ideally with some semblance of grace. And I'm relieved to hear the response that comes today from today's gospel and psalm. The psalm gives words to our prayer, asking God to enter in and help us with all this contempt. And then Jesus teaches us how to go out, not to bludgeon people with our truth, not to spurn them, but to live as their guests, to be curious, dependent, grateful. Friends, this is really challenging work. And this is how I hope that we can live together between now and November 5th and then far beyond as well. This is one of the great blessings of this place. We are a purple congregation, red and blue and so much more all together. And thanks be to God for that. We come around this altar shoulder to shoulder as Republicans and Democrats and Libertarians and Independents and you name it. We are here, all together, and we need each other. Maybe now more than ever, this is who we are called to be as a congregation. It can be tempting to make the more hot button issues off limits just to get along more easily, but that doesn't really serve us. We need to be able to talk about all these issues because while they may be political, they are also gospel questions. Questions of health, questions of bodies, questions of money, of migration, of who belongs. These are all things that Jesus worried about and worked on, and he invites us to join him in that work. We happen to legislate many of them now, but they remain concerns of the gospel. And as such, we need to be able to think about them together, talk about them here, look for a holy way forward together. We can't do this work in silos. or in echo chambers? These questions can't be taboo if we're really going to live the gospel as guests sitting curiously at each other's feet, longing to hear what the other is aching for, even and especially across the aisle. But we have to do it with love and tenderness and deep, deep respect. There is no room for contempt, not here, not in this holy thing we're trying to create together. That is our charge, to break out of the ruts that we experience in so many other places. We spend so much of our time in these bubbles where we are separated out by political categories. And it becomes so easy to sling mud, to say nasty things about the types of people we assume are not present. But this doesn't work here, because we are all here. And thanks be to God that we can dig in together and practice a different way of living. When we come together and wrestle with these political issues, which are gospel issues, we may well come to different conclusions. Of course we will, because the Bible is not an ironclad rule book with only one right way forward. It's a guide, a book of poetry, a collection of stories. It's the chronicle of people reaching for God and God reaching back over so many years, just as we are attempting to do now. And so we walk together, and we talk and listen together, and we reach for the way forward together. Knowing that sometimes the same process will lead us to different answers. And that's okay. We don't have to agree. We don't have to convince each other of anything. Instead, we are called to love each other well. We're called to offer grace instead of contempt, to embrace our interdependence instead of scorn, to get more curious than we are certain. We are called to be each other's guests.